Chapter 4. Christian George King had vanished before we touched the ground. But the word was already passing from hut to hut to turn out quietly, and we knew that the nimble barbarian had got hold of the truth, or something near it. In a space among the trees behind the encampment of us visitors, naval and military, was a snugly screened spot where we kept the stores that were in use and did our cookery. The word was passed to assemble here. It was very quickly given, and was given, so far as we were concerned, by Sergeant Bruce, who was as good in a soldier point of view as he was bad in a tyrannical one. We were ordered to drop into this space, quietly, behind the trees, one by one. As we assembled here, the seamen assembled too. Within 10 minutes, as I should estimate, we were all here, except the usual guard upon the beach. The beach, we could see it through the wood, looked as it always had done in the hottest time of the day. The guard were in the shadow of the sloop's hull, and nothing was moving but the sea, and that moved very faintly. Work had always been knocked off at that hour, until the sun grew less fierce, and the sea breeze rose, so that its being holiday with us made no difference, just then, in the look of the place. But I may mention that it was a holiday, and the first we had had since our hard work began. Last night's ball had been given, on the leaks being repaired, and the careening done. The worst of the work was over, and tomorrow we were to begin to get the sloop afloat again. We Marines were now drawn up here under arms. The chase party were drawn up separate. The men of the Columbus were drawn up separate. The officers stepped out into the midst of the three parties, and spoke so as all might hear. Captain Carton was the officer in command, and he had a spy glass in his hand. His coxswain stood by him with another spy glass, and with a slate on which he seemed to have been taking down signals. "Now, men," says Captain Carton, "I have to let you know, for your satisfaction. Firstly, that there are 10 pirate boats, strongly manned and armed, lying hidden up a creek yonder on the coast, under the overhanging branches of the dense trees. Secondly, that they will certainly come out this night when the moon rises, on a pillaging and murdering expedition, of which some part of the mainland is the object. Thirdly, don't cheer, men, that we will give chase, and, if we can get at them, rid the world of them, please God." Nobody spoke, that I heard, and nobody moved, that I saw. Yet there was a kind of ring, as if every man answered and approved with the best blood that was inside of him. "Sir," says Captain Marion, "I beg to volunteer on this service, with my boats. My people volunteer, to the ship's boys. In His Majesty's name and service," the other answers, touching his hat, "I accept your aid with pleasure. Lieutenant Linderwood, how will you divide your men?" I was ashamed. I give it out to be written down as large and plain as possible. I was heart and soul ashamed of my thoughts of those two sick officers, Captain Marion and Lieutenant Linderwood, when I saw them, then and there. The spirit in those two gentlemen beat down their illness, and very ill I knew them to be, like St. George beating down the dragon. Pain and weakness, want of ease and want of rest, had no more place in their minds than fear itself. Meaning now to express for my lady to write down exactly what I felt then and there, I felt this. You two brave fellows, that I had been so grudgeful of, I know that, if you were dying you would put it off to get up, and do your best, and then you would be so modest, that in lying down again to die, you would hardly say, 'I did it.' Apostrophe, it did me good. It really did me good. But, to go back to where I broke off," says Captain Carton to Lieutenant Linderwood, "Sir, how will you divide your men? There is not room for all, and a few men should, in any case, be left here." There was some debate about it. At last, it was resolved to leave 8 Marines and 4 seamen on the island, besides the sloop's 2 boys. And because it was considered that the friendly Sambos would only want to be commanded in case of any danger, though none at all was apprehended there, the officers were in favor of leaving the 2 non-commissioned officers, Bruce and Charker. It was a heavy disappointment to them, just as my being one of the left was a heavy disappointment to me then, but not soon afterwards. We men drew lots for it, and I drew Island. So did Tom Packer. So, of course, did four more of our rank and file. When this was settled, verbal instructions were given to all hands to keep the intended expedition secret, in order that the women and children might not be alarmed, or the expedition put in a difficulty by more volunteers. The assembly was to be on that same spot at sunset. Every man was to keep up an appearance, meanwhile, of occupying himself in his usual way. That is to say, every man excepting four old trusty seamen, who were appointed, with an officer, to see to the arms and ammunition, and to muffle the rowlocks of the boats, and to make everything as trim, and swift and silent as it could be made. The Sambo pilot had been present all the while, in case of his being wanted, and had said to the officer in command, 500 times over, if he had said it once, that Christian George King would stay with the Sogiers, and take care of the boofer ladies, and the boofer child's boofer being that native's expression for beautiful. He was now asked a few questions concerning the putting off of the boats, and in particular, whether there was any way of embarking at the back of the island, which Captain Carton would have half liked to do, and then have dropped round in its shadow, and slanted across to the main. But, no, says Christian George King. No, no, no. Told you so, 10 times. No, no, no. All reef, all rock, all swim, all drown. Striking out as he said it, like a swimmer gone mad, and turning over on his back on dry land, and spluttering himself to death, in a manner that made him quite an exhibition. The sun went down, after appearing to be a long time about it, and the assembly was called. Every man answered to his name, of course, and was at his post. It was not yet black dark, and the roll was only just gone through, when up comes Mr. Commissioner Portage with his diplomatic coat on. Captain Carton, says he, sir, what is this? This, Mr. Commissioner, he was very short with him, is an expedition against the pirates. It is a secret expedition, so please to keep it a secret. Sir, says Commissioner Portage, I trust there is going to be no unnecessary cruelty committed? Sir, returns the officer, I trust not. That is not enough, sir, cries Commissioner Portage, getting wroth. Captain Carton, I give you notice. Government requires you to treat the enemy with great delicacy, consideration, clemency, and forbearance. Sir, says Captain Carton, I am an English officer, commanding English men, and I hope I am not likely to disappoint the government's just expectations. But, I presume you know that these villains under their black flag have despoiled our countrymen of their property, burnt their homes, barbarously murdered them, and their little children, and worse than murdered their wives and daughters? Perhaps I do. Captain Carton, answers Portage, waving his hand, with dignity, perhaps I do not. It is not customary, sir, for government to commit itself. It matters very little, Mr. Portage, whether or no. Believing that I hold my commission by the allowance of God, and not that I have received it direct from the devil, I shall certainly use it, with all avoidance of unnecessary suffering, and with all merciful swiftness of execution, to exterminate these people from the face of the earth. Let me recommend you to go home, sir, and to keep out of the night air. Never another syllable did that officer say to the commissioner, but turned away to his men. The commissioner buttoned his diplomatic coat to the chin, said, Mr. Kitten, attend me. Gasped, half choked himself, and took himself off. It now fell very dark, indeed. I have seldom, if ever, seen it darker, nor yet so dark. The moon was not due until 1 in the morning, and it was but a little after 9, when our men lay down where they were mustered. It was pretended that they were to take a nap, but everybody knew that no nap was to be got under the circumstances. Though all were very quiet, there was a restlessness among the people. Much what I have seen among the people on a race course, when the bell has rung for the saddling for a great race with large stakes on it. At 10, they put off. Only one boat putting off at a time, another following in 5 minutes, both then lying on their oars until another followed. Ahead of all, paddling his own outlandish little canoe without a sound, went the Sambo pilot, to take them safely outside the reef. No light was shown but once, and that was in the commanding officer's own hand. I lighted the dark lantern for him, and he took it from me when he embarked. They had blue lights and such like with them, but kept themselves as dark as murder. The expedition got away with wonderful quietness, and Christian George King soon came back dancing with joy. "Yup, so dear," says he to myself in a very objectionable kind of convulsions. "Christian George King's are very glad. Pirates all be blown a pieces. Yup. Yup." My reply to that cannibal was, "However glad you may be, hold your noise, and don't dance jigs and slap your knees about it, for I can't abear to see you do it." I was on duty then, we 12 who were left being divided into 4 watches of 3 each, 3 hours spell. I was relieved at 12. A little before that time, I had challenged, and Miss Marion and Mrs. Beltet had come in. "Good Davis," says Miss Marion, "what is the matter? Where is my brother?" I told her what was the matter, and where her brother was. "Oh, heaven help him," says she, clasping her hands and looking up. She was close in front of me, and she looked most lovely to be sure. "He is not sufficiently recovered, not strong enough for such strife. If you had seen him, miss," I told her, "as I saw him when he volunteered, you would have known that his spirit is strong enough for any strife. It will bear his body, miss, to wherever duty calls him. It will always bear him to an honorable life, or a brave death." "Heaven bless you," says she, touching my arm. "I know it. Heaven bless you." Mrs. Beltet surprised me by trembling and saying nothing. They were still standing looking towards the sea and listening, after the relief had come round. It continuing very dark, I asked to be allowed to take them back. Miss Marion thanked me, and she put her arm in mine, and I did take them back. I have now got to make a confession that will appear singular. After I had left them, I laid myself down on my face on the beach, and cried for the first time, since I had frightened birds as a boy at Norwich Bottom, to think what a poor, ignorant, low-placed, private soldier I was. It was only for half a minute or so. A man can't at all times be quite master of himself, and it was only for half a minute or so. Then I up, and went to my hut, and turned into my hammock, and fell asleep with wet eyelashes, and a sore, sore heart. Just as I had often done, when I was a child, and had been worse used than usual. I slept as a child under those circumstances might, very sound, and yet very sore at heart all through my sleep. I was awoke by the words, "He is a determined man." I had sprung out of my hammock, and had seized my firelock, and was standing on the ground, saying the words myself. "He is a determined man." But, the curiosity of my state was, that I seemed to be repeating them after somebody, and to have been wonderfully startled by hearing them. As soon as I came to myself, I went out of the hut, and away to where the guard was. Sharker challenged. "Who goes there?" "A friend." "Not Gill?" says he, as he shouldered his piece. "Gill," says one. "Why, what the deuce do you do out of your hammock?" says he. "Too hot for sleep," says I. "Is all right?" "Right," says Charker. "Yes, yes, all's right enough here. What should be wrong here? It's the boats that we want to know of. Except for fireflies twinkling about, and the lonesome splashes of great creatures as they drop into the water, there's nothing going on here to ease a man's mind from the boats." The moon was above the sea, and had risen, I should say, some half an hour. As Charker spoke, with his face towards the sea, I, looking landward, suddenly laid my right hand on his breast, and said, "Don't move. Don't turn. Don't raise your voice. You never saw a Maltese face here?" "No. What do you mean?" he asks, staring at me. "Nor yet an English face, with one eye and a patch across the nose?" "No. What ails you? What do you mean?" I had seen both, looking at us round the stem of a coconut tree, where the moon struck them. I had seen that Sambo pilot, with one hand laid on the stem of the tree, drawing them back into the heavy shadow. I had seen their naked cutlasses twinkle and shine, like bits of the moonshine in the water, that had got blown ashore among the trees by the light wind. I had seen it all, in a moment. And I saw in a moment, as any man would, that the signaled move of the pirates on the mainland was a plot and a feint, that the leak had been made to disable the sloop, that the boats had been tempted away, to leave the island unprotected, that the pirates had landed by some secreted way at the back, and that Christian George King was a double-dyed traitor, and a most infernal villain. I considered, still all in one and the same moment, that Charker was a brave man, but not quick with his head, and that Sergeant Bruce, with a much better head, was close by. All I said to Charker was, "I am afraid we are betrayed. Turn your back full to the moonlight on the sea, and cover the stem of the coconut tree which will then be right before you, at the height of a man's heart. Are you right?" "I am right," says Charker, turning instantly, and falling into the position with a nerve of iron, "and right ain't left. Is it, Gil?" A few seconds brought me to Sergeant Bruce's hut. He was fast asleep, and being a heavy sleeper, I had to lay my hand upon him to rouse him. The instant I touched him, he came rolling out of his hammock, and upon me like a tiger. And a tiger he was, except that he knew what he was up to, in his utmost heat, as well as any man. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.